how you manage your power side really gives you a lot of ways to turn what you would traditionally rely on, just the block reward from Bitcoin mining as your only source of revenue. Depending on your power contracts and how you're really structured, you could actually make a lot more playing the energy markets.
You have like this, I don't know, 15-30% window where there's this huge peak and trough in between power production. In my mind, like that's just wasted energy. The energy producers can go up to that high capacity. And what I think is they'll be using and they'll be utilizing Bitcoin miners to then consume and fund that 15-30%. It's going to completely eliminate any peaker plants out there, because why would you have such an inefficient source of energy when you can be consistently consuming that excess energy on demand at any time?
Introducing the Blockware Marketplace. Start mining Bitcoin today. This has the potential to transform the mining industry, as now anyone can buy a Bitcoin ASIC using on-chain or Lightning, see its historical and live hash rate before purchasing, and be earning Bitcoin mining rewards in minutes. This brings transparency and turnkey mining to a whole other level. Start mining Bitcoin today at marketplace.blockwaresolutions.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Blockware Intelligence Podcast. This week I have on Mitch and Dan from Foreman. Guys, welcome.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us, Joe.
What's up?
Yeah, glad to have both of you guys. I want to kind of start off with your background. When did you get involved with Bitcoin and the Bitcoin mining space, and kind of how has it changed since you got involved? Dan, maybe we can start with you and then we'll go to Mitch.
Sure. Bitcoin mining. So I'm trying to rewind a little bit here. Me and my co-founder, Jake, I'll be totally transparent. I'm pretty sure it was a drunken night in Baltimore in like 2017, where I feel like I can picture this corner we were standing on. I don't know if we were waiting for an Uber or what, but I feel like people were just starting to talk about crypto. People were starting to get into, I think, it was a big pump and dump time where tons of ICOs were starting to drop, and I think Bitcoin was still maybe $700 or so. And we had both heard about mining, and we were like, hey, you want to try doing some, try to get into Bitcoin mining? So 2017, I think we bought our first few S9s. We deviated a little bit, bought some L3s and all, but we don't really talk about that. So we started with some S9, started some small scale hobby mining back in 2017, and then fell in love with the tech, really. That was what really brought me closer to it. We had worked together in our previous life together, and we did good software development together. We were on the same team for a while, and just Bitcoin mining. We had a problem trying to manage our stuff remotely. And that kind of paved the path for the development of Foreman. So 2017 or so, I think that was when we first really took a look at Bitcoin mining. And now here we are. Wow, it's been 5-6 years later and we're still in it. So it's fun.
Nice. Love to hear it. Mitch, how about you? When did you first get into Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining?
I got into Bitcoin a few years ago. It was like the previous bull run, and just got interested in the technology and Bitcoin itself, and investing and the different type, the different like levels of money that it is, really. And then I kind of just was looking for how to work in Bitcoin itself, and kind of fell into Bitcoin mining. So I was working in Bitcoin mining, writing stuff, doing analysis, and I got picked up by Foreman, by Dan, and the rest is history. Just started working with them.
Yeah,
I'll be honest, Joe, too. So I fell in love with Bitcoin mining before I actually knew what Bitcoin was. We came into it with a simple fiat approach, where you buy a miner, you plug it in, and all of a sudden it's going to pay itself off in 30 or 60 days. And that was what got us into it. But it wasn't until maybe 2018 or so when I actually learned a little bit more about Bitcoin. And after some weird encounters with a bank, you realize that there is something out there that's better than this. And then I kind of orange-pilled myself. After I already loved the tech and the problems that it helped me and Jake write software for, I fell in love with Bitcoin later, though. So I wanted to be totally honest there. Fell in love with the tech to Bitcoin mining 2017. Fell in love with Bitcoin probably 2018.
Yeah, very interesting.
I was in college, and I remember like hearing about Bitcoin for the first time, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna start mining. And at the time, I was like, okay, so how much can I make mining with my computer at home? And it's this computer that I built in high school with like an i3 processor, and ASICs were just coming out. So I'm like, oh, that's not profitable. Maybe I'll just buy some Bitcoin. And then it went from $1,400 down to like $300. And I looked at it, I was like, ah, glad I didn't buy any of that. And so past bunch of years go by and the price goes up. I just completely forgot about it. And then I started to get back into it. But yeah, originally I was trying to do some mining with an i3 processor, figured out pretty quick that was not profitable at all.
Nice. Yeah, you're so lucky you didn't buy Bitcoin at 1400. Everyone wishes they would have bought Bitcoin at 1400. Dan, that was interesting, the point that you made about like, just you saw these machines basically print money. And at the time, I guess when you got into it, it was like printing a lot of money and you didn't really care about Bitcoin. I feel like I've heard some stories of people outside the US, that's how they got into mining originally. They were like, wait, I can plug in this computer and all of a sudden like I can turn $1 of energy into like $10 of this digital coin, which I can sell on an exchange for real money. Like, yeah, let's do it. It's crazy how some people discover mining, but they don't truly understand Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, our mine was about an hour from Baltimore. So that's where we are. That's where this office actually is, still in Baltimore, Maryland. Our mine was in Westminster, Maryland, so about an hour away. And we were paying residential electricity rates. It was like 12.5 cents a kilowatt hour. Nowadays, you would never mine under those scenarios because it's just not really profitable anymore. But back then, Bitcoin went on a rip, and it just became this fiat game that we were playing. I'll buy an S9 for $2,000, and then 30 or 45 or 60 days, it'll pay itself off. And then we had this business model, we'll call it, where every 60 days, we'll double. It's going to pay it off, and then we'll double, and then we'll have two, and then we'll have four, and then we'll have eight, and it'll just keep going. And then you realize as soon as you're actually ready to execute on that, all right, it's time to buy more. Oh, wow, 6-month delivery date. Well, there goes that business plan. So, yeah, it was the tech that brought me in. And residential mining, 12.5 cents, we don't mine anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, totally fair. I know you guys are very involved with the Bitcoin mining space. Obviously, you guys, you know, run Forman. I'm curious, like, big picture, how do you see the mining industry and, like, energy industries evolving over the next 5 to 10 years?
You want to go, Mitch?
Yeah, I can take that. So I think, right now, there's, like, you have the grid, and the grid only uses as much as it takes in. So if there's X amount of demand, you have to meet that demand with the exact same amount of supply. And so we have like all these peaker plants, and these peaker plants turn on when you need excess power, and they're completely inefficient. They're usually they're extremely inefficient. And so I think in the next like 5 to 10 years, you're going to see a lot of energy producers have a section where they have Bitcoin miners installed. And so what that would look like is, you know, if you look over the annual energy consumption, you have a peak and a trough. And sometimes, it peaks in the winter and in the peak months of the summer. And then it troughs out when heat and temperature changes based on geography. So you have like this, I don't know, 30% window where there's this huge peak and trough in between power production. In my mind, like that's just wasted energy, and it's and so the energy producers can go up to that high capacity, and what I think is they'll be utilizing Bitcoin miners to then consume and fund that 30% to 15% to 30%. I'm just making up numbers. I don't know exactly how much it is, but I think they're going to be putting in miners to consume that and fund that excess energy so that they can stay profitable for longer. They can lower electricity prices for everybody. And then we don't have this excess waste, and it's going to completely eliminate any peaker plants out there, because why would you have such an inefficient source of energy when you can be consistently consuming that excess energy on demand at any time and turning on and off the miners? So that's I think that is one direction in which Bitcoin mining will go in the next 5 to 10 years.
I was gonna say we actually went to visit a site not too long ago, within the last year, and it was historically a peaker plant, and it produced about 100 megawatts, but there was generally only ever demand for about 25 megs or so, which means that also 75 megs was getting dumped right into the ground. So you're producing 100, the grid's only taking 25, so now you got 75 just literally getting sent right into the ground. You're making nothing off of it. So for them, it's a huge upside potential, because now, rather than just having that loss and just that waste that's going because it's not needed by the grid, now you're able to find a new revenue stream. And it actually brought that peaker plant kind of back to life, and it gave it more revenue streams to help really fund that whole operation. So even for just the energy companies that are just traditional peaker plants or any generational plant, Bitcoin mining really has a huge, can really affect their finances at the very least too.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a no-brainer for a company or entity that's producing a lot of energy and they don't have the, I guess, demand for that energy 24/7, 365. I guess, like, what do you think has held back, you know, oil and gas companies and other big players in the energy industry from, like, you know, really diving deeper into Bitcoin mining? I mean, I feel like the trend is fairly obvious, right? We see like ExxonMobil working with someone to build, capture their excess natural gas, or we see Duke Energy researching Bitcoin mining and other firms and Shell sponsoring the Bitcoin conference. You know, like, why do you think it's been such a slow process to get these companies more involved in the Bitcoin mining space? Dan or Mitch, either one, you could take it.
Mitch, you want to go?
I mean, I think it's big knowledge gap, first off. So, yeah. I mean, it's like hardly anybody understands really what Bitcoin is, in my opinion. And the people who say they do don't necessarily do. And then you go down Bitcoin mining. I'm sorry, did I say Bitcoin mining the first time? I meant just Bitcoin in general. People don't understand it. And then, you know, you go down the Bitcoin mining rabbit hole, and it's like a lot of people don't necessarily understand that either. But it's funny, though, how kind of like the knowledge overlaps with energy producers and miners. Energy producers know that, like, if they understand that you can fund their energy source with another you know, type of funding device like a Bitcoin miner, then it kind of, they kind of like, it clicks with them. So there's a certain level that clicks, but I don't, I think it's just a knowledge gap right now. And then also, you know, when people think Bitcoin, they think volatile, they think it's not a sturdy ground to position their business on. And the energy sector is really old, and the Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin is very, very new. I think that's just a gap there.
Yeah, if you think about somebody that's mining off-grid, or just traditional oil and gas company running off-grid, there's a ton of excess gas. In a traditional model, maybe they'd cap it or flare it or something like that. There's an opportunity to put a Bitcoin mine there and generate revenue, but the amount of revenue that you're talking about by putting a mine there is pretty minimal compared to how much the rest of their portfolio is generating. So I think the thing that we all experience every day is we're always trying to fight the doubt that comes with Bitcoin and the doubt that comes with Bitcoin mining. And I think as an industry, we have to show that, I guess we can be trusted partners when it comes to kind of being an avenue for off-taking some of that gas in just a traditional kind of off-grid. We're only talking about off-grid here. So if we're going to go in and say, hey, I'll take that gas from you and I'll help maybe even do a rev share with you and give you some revenue off of it rather than just getting wasted or going to waste. On the other side of it, that oil and gas company is probably thinking, all right, I'm going to go ahead and have some risk here because is this Bitcoin miner? It's so volatile. It's so crazy. Is this guy going to be around in 2 years? Am I going to have to deal with this problem 2 years down the road? How long is this relationship going to last? It's just too many unknowns for me. We'll just do what we normally do and away we go. So I think that just, it's like Mitch said, a lot of education, seeing companies get shaken out during the bear market and companies just going bankrupt and Chapter 11s left and right and tons of assets getting sold off. People running companies, bull market vibes only, never thinking about the bear market, doesn't help us any, because as soon as you see big players, big pubcos starting to dry up, that hurts our image. So I think education and also making sure that the people that are representing us in this space, the titans of the industry, making sure that they're also good spokespersons and advocates for Bitcoin and they're not really trying to just run a fiat company. So that's another big thing too. We have to make sure that we're really fostering a lot of strong, large scale miners in this space because that helps our image too. Not ones that'll just hyperscale and then go Chapter 11.
Yeah, fully agree. I mean, I feel like the entire mining industry, like, you know, during the bull run 2020, 2021 went like full degen leverage, not the entire mining industry, but a large portion of them, you know, went full degen leverage long Bitcoin ASICs, you know, tried to hold all the Bitcoin that they mined and didn't, you know, pretended like we would never see another Bitcoin bear market again, which, you know, at the time everyone's, you know, hype and you're like hyper Bitcoinization is here. And then obviously it was not here. so hopefully, you know, more large companies will learn their lesson and people will be more conservative, with their finances and, you know, operating, their, you know, large Bitcoin mining companies. This might be a question for Mitch. We have the 2024 halving coming up, and this is kind of related to, you know, bear markets and making sure as a miner you're able to survive when times get tough. Do you think we're going to see like a large miner capitulation when the halving occurs, or do you think, you know, price will be higher by then and miners won't, you'll have to, you know, shut off machines? What are you thinking?
Well, obviously I don't know what the price is going to be, but at the halving, for those who don't necessarily know, the revenue for a Bitcoin miner gets cut in half. And so that's, I think it's like 330 days from now. The revenue that you're producing every single day gets completely cut in half. And so you better make sure that your operating expenses are still below that revenue and that you can function profitably. How you plan for that, I'm not sure. I think it's different for everybody. Will the price go up? Maybe. We could still like go sideways until then. Maybe people print more ordinals or inscriptions or something and the fee market explodes again. Who knows? I don't know. But I think the revenue side is kind of unpredictable. Historically, in all these other bear markets, you see a bottoming happening. So a bottom happens and then there's just like a slow grind up. I don't know if we're gonna, you know, it's kind of like unpredictable. But I think the best thing you can do is make sure you have the cheapest electricity possible and your operating expenses are really low and you're ready and you're not overextending yourself, because, you know, maybe you buy a bunch of miners and then you overextend yourself and now you don't have a bunch of you don't have money on the side to kind of like help you through some of these hard times, because really you have to kind of make sure that you function through and kind of like even out that revenue flow if it's dipping below. So
yeah, I think that anybody that's probably going into the halving right now, if they have not started calling themselves an energy company, they're probably going to be behind the eight ball, I would say. I think that most, if you look at some of the statements from the end of last year from a lot of pubcos, I saw one of them, their revenue for the year, 40% of it came off of demand response and just curtailment. So by having a very well-structured supply, just commodity contracts, so how you're buying your power, what's your rate, how long the term is, how many megawatts are you locking as part of like a block purchase or something like that, how you manage your power side really gives you a lot of ways to turn what you would traditionally rely on, just the block reward from Bitcoin mining as your only source of revenue. Depending on your power contracts and how you're really structured, you could actually make a lot more playing the energy markets. So if you are just hauling ass through 2023, relying on 6.25 Bitcoin every 10 minutes, getting a slice of that, and you haven't prepared for the halving, you need to start viewing yourself as an energy company and trying to find every minute, or every 5 minutes or 10 minutes, how am I going to make the most off of the power that I have? Is that mining Bitcoin at this moment, or is that curtailing and selling that power back? And the people that are killing it right now through all the changes that went on with natural gas prices, all the volatility through all of last year, the people that really killed it were the people that had good power strategies and effective curtailment and demand response participation. So that's going to be a big revenue driver moving forward too.
Yeah, fully agree about the demand response participation. I feel like, you know, we've seen Riot, they would announce like, hey, this quarter we made, you know, X million dollars just turning off our machines and selling the power back. Like, I think that's super great, super awesome, and it shows like how Bitcoin is actually helping balance the grid, which is such a, you know, important topic nowadays. I'm curious from like, I've heard other people try to argue this, that argue like, okay, like demand response is cool, but wouldn't it be better to like have very large batteries that save the power and then use it later, since instead of overproducing? Like, why do you guys think that that's a bad argument per se, and that, you know, Bitcoin miners as demand response, you know, platforms are way better at being a battery than a battery? Hey everyone, this week I want to talk about Stampseed. This is very cool metal plate where you can literally stamp your Bitcoin seed phrase with this hammer that they sell you into this metal plate. This is a must have for all Bitcoin holders. If you have taken self-custody of your Bitcoin, you want to make sure you've recorded your seed phrase on something that is fireproof, waterproof, and time resistant. This is a great product for Bitcoiners who have taken self-custody and want that extra level of security and resiliency to store their Bitcoin. So if you are interested in this product, definitely check out stampseed.com. Use code BLOCKWARE15 for 15% off the entire website. This expires at the end of May, so go to stampseed.com today.
I think people get mad when you call Bitcoin a battery. People like the people who love physics, or yeah, I don't know. They're like very energy minded. They're like, oh, Bitcoin's not a battery. And you know, I probably agree. It's not a battery. It's like a battery, but it consumes power, and so it essentially provides the same function. So if you have like kind of like a triangle, and your triangle is the grid power producer and the Bitcoin miner, and then you try and put batteries in between that, you're adding capital expenditure immediately. So you have to pay for these batteries and install them, and then two, like the output of these batteries, you can sit there and charge them, but the output is like orders of magnitude lower than just producing the energy itself as far as the power density. So how much the power density is like how much power you can fit inside per weight or some I'm forgetting exactly the metric, but it's orders of magnitude less than where if you were to, you know, produce it on the spot. And so you're kind of losing so much efficiency. You're losing efficiency there, you're losing efficiency through taking and trying to produce these batteries in the first place, when in reality you could have two functions. One function is produce energy and push it to the grid. Second function is produce energy and push it to Bitcoin miners. And both of them produce revenue. Batteries produce revenue, but then you have like one step removed. And so, like I said, there's kind of like these inefficiencies that are happening. I think Bitcoin miners just really completely eliminate the need for batteries, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. When you think about how quick it is to build out and scale a Bitcoin mine compared to the capital that it would take to build out a large battery array that's going to hang off the grid, Bitcoin mining really does become like a rapid stamp where you can build one site, perfect what you're doing, and just quickly hyperscale those to any interconnect you have. Batteries, it's a lot more capital involved. I don't have the ratio there, but I can just tell you that it's a lot easier to scale a Bitcoin mine than it is to build out battery arrays all over. And then it's exactly what Mitch said. If I go to Walmart today and buy a pack of batteries and I put them in the drawer and they're fully charged when I get them and I put them in the drawer and I take them out a year later, probably not going to get any juice out of them because they just died. They just there's loss there. So that's the big problem you have with batteries too.
Yep, definitely agree. Like the technology for batteries is not there for like actually balancing grids by any means, and may never get there. Who knows? This might be more of a question for Dan. So Dan, you know, we've been talking about Bitcoin mining, but what is Forman? What have you guys built for the Bitcoin mining space?
What have we built? So Forman Base, we'll just say Forman Base. We started very traditional miner management software where management was pretty much what we needed to run that super small mine on our way in Westminster, which was where I didn't want to have to drive up there and I didn't want to have to reboot machines myself because that's an hour one way, an hour back, and then you get back home and you realize, damn, it went offline again, so I got to drive all the way back up there and reboot it and all the way back. So traditionally, Forman was very, very simple. Remote monitoring and configuring, configuring pools, rebooting, very kind of lightweight. We expanded that, added a lot of automation, so ideally you don't need to have 300 technicians sitting there watching screens all day trying to figure out when to click the reboot button. Instead, there's something just running and saying, hey, that machine stopped hashing, let me automatically reboot it. Because everybody sleeps, I imagine we all sleep on this call, so you don't want to go to sleep and lose 8 hours of hashing just to wake up and find out that everything was offline. Over the last year, I think our identity has changed a good bit. We really, Forman gets built out of what our customers say they need. So when we were small-scale hobby miners, I didn't have much of a need for 95% of what Forman has today. So our customers feel the market's changing a little over a year ago, and we started getting a lot of requests around curtailment. So how can Forman help me turn the mine off? My power strategy, there's going to be times when I'm on peak, times when I'm off peak. I'm going to need to turn the mine on certain times, turn the mine off certain times. How can we automate this? And eventually it led us down the route where we built the way for miners to automatically participate in demand response. So that means that the customer can take their load. You can offer it up to the grid. Say I've got 100 megawatts, I can offer it up to the grid. I'm now the insurance policy for the grid. They will, if there's ever a peak demand, they can say, hey, we need 100 megs. I'm going to ask you to turn off. So now I've got 100 extra megs to give to my customers. So they're asking the Bitcoin miner to turn off. And now they've got, rather than having to produce 100 extra megs, they have 100 extra megs to play with and keep people's lights on. So that's the whole demand response game. And the way the Bitcoin miners are incentivized for that is you're the insurance policy and you are paid every month or every quarter to just be there and ready. So you get checks every month or every quarter just saying, hey, you've got 100 megs ready. Thanks for staying around. As soon as I call you, though, you better respond. But here's that insurance check. Just like when you're sending out checks to your auto insurance every month. You never need it, but if you ever get into an accident, you're expecting your insurance company to cover it. Just like Bitcoin miners to demand response, they're getting checks every month. And then when the grid needs it, they're expected to respond. So our customers, as the markets changed, they started looking a lot more towards demand response. So we built software. So when they participate in a demand response program through a CSP, a curtailment service provider, when their load is dispatched, that automatically comes to Forman. We then automatically curtail the load. So now they get perfect performance in all these programs. The revenue that you make is based on how well you perform. So we help them perform super well, so they get the most revenue out of it. So this is how a lot of people successfully, a lot of our customers successfully navigated some of those, some of the bear market. So that's half of it. So half of it's the demand response side. The other identity that we kind of have now too is just managing that energy portfolio. So that includes demand response, but also say you're in a deregulated market like ERCOT, and there's a situation where I've got 100 megawatts committed to me. So I went on some huge power contract, say a 5-year deal, and I went to a supplier and said, I'm gonna post collateral, I want 100 megs committed to me, and I want it to be $20 a megawatt hour. So I have to post collateral for all that, but then I get this super cheap power contract for the next 5 years. So now I've got 100 megs committed to me, and now it's on me to manage it. I can mine with it, or if there's ever a situation where pricing goes crazy, where the real-time market in ERCOT takes off. So say if it's less than 20 or more than 20, I'm mining, because that means I'm making money here. I'm buying power for less than the market is. But then if it takes off so much, the revenue I might make from mining, if I stop mining, ERCOT now buys my power in the real-time market. So if I've committed to a $20 per megawatt hour block, and then pricing takes off to $5,000 a megawatt block, a megawatt hour, if I curtail, ERCOT is buying it from me real time. So that's how you see when those large pubcos say, hey, look, we made $4 million, $5 million, $6 million last month just from curtailment. It's because they're doing that arbitrage with the power that they have. So they're saying every 5 minutes, what am I doing? Am I mining or am I selling the power? And if they sell the power, it has to get bought in that real-time market. So when pricing takes off, they're making a killing off of it. So we help our customers also auto-curtail for demand response and also auto-curtail around real-time energy markets.
Nice. Yeah, very cool. How many miners currently use Foreman right now? Is it like, you know, a ton of miners at this point? Or how much are you able to disclose on like your existing clients?
We keep it a little closer to the chest, mostly just trying to have all their interest, trying to keep them comfortable. But I can say that we're a SOC 2 Type 2 company, working on a SOC 1 now. We do a lot of business with a lot of the publicly traded miners in the space. For a very long time, we were on an island. There wasn't too much management software out there, so we did pretty good in the beginning, grabbing some land, but. I think there's competitors working up, so that's why we're also really more focused on the energy management side now too. Just preparing for a competitive space, we want to make sure that we're solving the most problems for our customers to kind of keep as many people around as we can. By helping people make money, that's a good way to keep them around.
Nice, yeah, I like it. I guess like, you know, running miner management software and building it, you guys probably have like a lot of experience with Bitcoin ASICs, and you probably have a lot of data on Bitcoin ASICs. Do you guys have like a manufacturer that you prefer? Obviously like MicroBT and Bitmain are the top two Bitcoin ASIC manufacturers. Do you have like a favorite one at the moment? Do you think one will grow market share or lose market share over the next, you know, 5-10 years? Like what do you see as far as what's going to happen in the ASIC manufacturer landscape?
I think that, I always like to wear my developer hat here, because I was one of the guys that used to write a lot of it. I don't write as much of it anymore. I wish I did, but I always like to think from a developer's perspective. I would probably say I'm okay showing my colors here. I would probably go MicroBT, just because I think that from a product standpoint, it's a lot more flexible and they give you a lot more control. And also, over the last year or a year and a half, they have developed their miners in a way where you can tell that they're building it for their customers rather than building it for themselves. And I think that's what separates some of the larger manufacturers. When you look at MicroBT, if you're going to get into a super aggressive demand response program like something in ERCOT, and for some of those, they get very precise with how your load has to shift. So that means that you're at X, you got to get to Y, and you need to track it linearly. So that means I can't just turn it off and sit at zero for the next 4 minutes. If I've got 5 minutes to get there, I have to step down. which means that when I turn a miner off, it has to shift right away, or else it's not going to step down. It's going to all just come off too quick. Same thing going back up, so I need to be able to shift up slowly. You can see that from the way MicroBT performs, some of the functionality they've added to it. Out of the box, if you can configure it right, it can pretty much pass any demand response program anywhere. You just have to know how to configure it. Bitmain, you have to get creative. You have to go down the route of third-party firmware, aftermarket firmware, trying to get it perform in a way that it should. And the firmware can make it do it. But now it's this two-part process now. I've got to buy the miner, and then I got to find a software provider for it. I got to buy the miner, and then I got to immediately swap out what would be, call it Windows, with something else. So it's just a little more. Bitmain's got a ton of market share. They were the first movers. Everybody likes the name. They built a great product. But just, I think MicroBT is changing the space a little bit, and I think longer term you'll see that market share. I think it'll correct. I think they build a much more flexible, responsive product, and the new form factor for the M56s and all, where it's this like 2U rack mount server chassis looking thing. I think they're also taking a fresh look at things and saying, how should this stuff really be designed, rather than let's just keep shipping out silver shoeboxes all day.
Yeah, very interesting insights there. Do you have any thoughts on Intel? I know they like entered the Bitcoin ASIC game for a minute, and then they're like, never mind, we're going to get back out of here. You guys are crazy. Do you think that they're ever going to come back, or what do you think? Do you think other people will come in and compete with MicroBT and Bitmain and Avalon, I guess? What are your thoughts there?
It broke my heart when I saw they exited. When me and Jake, whenever we're working on this stuff or we're working on this stuff, and I can tell you even today, like the developers on the team, anytime we're integrating with any miner, every single miner is totally different. So I can't build software that's going to work for the S19 XP, because as soon as Bitmain rolls out, say the K7, that was one we just had a problem with, same manufacturer, but it just behaves different. So every time something new comes out, it's a brand new integration we have to do usually. And then new manufacturers come along. There's just no specs. There's no standards. The only thing that's maybe a standard is Stratum, and that's just because that's what people need to get paid. But how you interact with the miner, there's just no spec, no standard there. Having Intel come into the space, we had some conversations with them super early on. They were taking a different approach to it. You could tell they're coming with more of a data center mindset, and I was super bullish on how I think they would shake this space up. Because when you start to put specs and standards on things and you make it easier to build software, that lets you focus more on what am I going to do around the miner, rather than having to constantly focus on just how do I talk to the miner? How do I talk to the miner? How do I talk to the miner? So I think that they had a really interesting perspective. I think that if I was a gambling man, I would have put all my money on Intel. But it's a good thing I didn't, I guess, because they've exited and it broke my heart.
Yeah, totally fair. One last big picture question, and then we can probably wrap it up. And Mitch, you can start with it, and Dan, you can have some final thoughts. How big do you think the Bitcoin mining industry can eventually become? I mean, we're coming up on, like we talked about, a block subsidy halving, where the block reward's going to go from 6.25 to 3.125. Do you think that, you know, Bitcoin is due for like a major bull run, and the mining industry is going to go on like another crazy wave, like what happened in 2020 and 2021? Do you think it could be bigger than that? Or do you think that at some point, you know, the mining industry is just not going to be as big as many people in the Bitcoin space may think? What do you think, Mitch?
I think there's probably a few different avenues in where Bitcoin mining can go, in my opinion. One of those is just excess energy in general. So if you look at the grid, excess energy on the grid, like what I was talking about before, if there is, you know, say 30% fluctuation in energy production and consumption on peak and trough months, I think it would be 30% of all production in the world, you know, would be that gap, because why would you waste that? It would just be, you know, people say that Bitcoin miners are the dung beetles or something like that, right? So they just consume the excess And then you look at, I don't know how much excess energy would be in like waterfalls or, well, so like hydro in small and large scale. So small scale, I think gridless compute is doing that over in Africa. They're using hydro style energy production and then siphoning that off to the town. And then large scale, you can look at flared gas. So I think it has, I mean, it's very new. Right now, where the industry itself is starting to kind of mature in a way where the machines are maturing, it's falling into its, it's like falling into its desired locations and in where it wants Bitcoin mining and the mining industry wants to kind of like fall into. Like I said before, it was, you know, excess energy and stranded energy, things like that. And so I think it's kind of like maturing. I think it has, I've no idea how big it can get. But if I had to guess, yeah, I think it would be, maybe it would be like 30% of all energy production if 30% is excess. Just a guess.
Yeah.
Bullish.
Yeah, that's bullish. Yeah, that's majorly like bullish, that. Yeah.
Not 60%, huh?
Dan, what do you
think? I mean, it could be, yeah. I'll stick by that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably good. I would say, so I think hash rate's still going to keep ripping just because, I mean, we're management software, so we end up getting roped into some conversations on people that are building outside. Sometimes it's really hard to, say, if I got on a conversation, if I had five calls in a week, I imagine everybody's going to say they've got a road to 100 megawatts. I'm sure Mitch and I both do. Joe, you probably have a route to 100 megs too. So everybody's building 100 meg sites out there. How many come to fruition? I would say probably less than 2%. But I would say that there's a lot of construction going on right now. People made some smart moves, building during the bear market, scooping up ASICs on the cheap, so the people that got shooken out at say 12 or 13 or 14K, all those assets that got sold at say $1,000 for an S19J Pro or whatever, those are all coming online now. So you can see hash rate starting to take off a good bit. So I would say that I think hash rate's still going to rip for a while, but I still don't think that the big players are really here yet. You got a taste of it, I think, in Pennsylvania, where you saw Nautilus with the Talon JV, where it's 150 megs behind the meter sitting on a nuke plant. That's a big energy company, and they're coming in and taking this super sexy approach to Bitcoin mining where it's running right off the nuke. The big players like that are not fully here yet. You think about the people that have these super large solar portfolios, gigawatts of solar production, gigawatts of wind production. All of those people are dipping their toes into Bitcoin mining, but because I think there's interest, but I don't think that they're quite here yet. So I'm super bullish on Bitcoin mining, and I think that we're early on. I don't think we're going to see the number of miners. I don't know if that goes up, but I think the size of the miner goes up.
Interesting. Yeah, great perspectives. Guys, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I think this is a very interesting, you know, mining-related episode. Not, and Blockware is a mining company, but believe it or not, not all of our episodes are always about mining. So this is great to have you guys on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Where can people find more about you guys individually and then also learn more about Foreman?
You can check out my OnlyFans. It's just kidding. So we're on Twitter at Foreman Mining. Foreman.mn is our website. Don't check it today. Maybe check it next Monday. We have a new marketing site launching, and that'll actually paint a much better picture for what we actually do, and it'll give you a good feel for where we're kind of taking the company. So that's how you can catch me. I'm the guy that's usually running the at Foreman Mining though. So if you feel like DMing me, just DM the company account.
Oh, you heard it here first, Joe. That's the new website. New website. It's going to drop next week.
I like it.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as well. And, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah.
Everybody knows how to find Mitch.
Exactly.
Well, oh, sorry. It's at Mitch Klee _ on Twitter.
No, I was actually being serious. Everybody actually knows how to find you.
I like it. I like it. Guys, thanks again. This is awesome.
Amazing. Yeah, thanks, Joe.